Welcome to Health Cetera's podcast. Significant racial disparities in disease characteristics, such as disease prevalence, progression, and severity, often indicate an issue beyond just the science. Alzheimer's disease is no different, with current studies pointing to a glaring difference between the disease's appearance and severity in Black individuals versus white ones. On this Health Cetera podcast, Barbara Glickstein, Health Cetera correspondent and public health nurse, hosts Liz Siegert, an independent health journalist and Association of Healthcare Journalists topic leader on aging, for a discussion about the conspicuous racial disparities among those at risk for Alzheimer's disease, those diagnosed with it, and the severity of individual Alzheimer's cases. This podcast first aired on Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio on January 5th, 2022.
This is Barbara Glickstein for Health Cetera in the Catskills. Numerous studies have shown that Black individuals were not being diagnosed with Alzheimer's or related dementias or seeking treatment until the disease process was more advanced. Liz Siegert, a reporter who covers issues of aging and is the Association of Healthcare Journalists topic leader on aging, returns to Health Cetera to report on a new study findings that shows racial disparities in Alzheimer's disease diagnosis between Black and white research study participants continues to be an issue. Welcome back to Health Cetera, Liz.
Hi, Barbara. Happy to be here.
I know that you posted on the Association for Healthcare of Healthcare Journalists blog this most recent study, and we'll discuss those findings and then talk to our listeners about what they can do, either as being members of the Black community or knowing practitioners who are listening, to be better alerted to what actions should be taken to address this racial disparity and structural racism in our care. So please discuss the findings of this new study.
Sure. There was an analysis conducted. It was a retrospective study of approximately 31,000 white participants and about 5,700 Black participants that have been involved in the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center's various study groups over the past 20 years or so. And the Alzheimer's Disease Research Centers are NIH-funded facilities at major medical institutions that look at brain health and how we can improve diagnosis and care for those with dementia. The study found overall that Black participants not only had more Alzheimer's and related dementias, as well as greater cognitive decline, but that they were diagnosed later in the process. The baseline data showed that about 35% of Black participants had lower odds of having a diagnosis at baseline. And what that means is that Black people are taking longer to get diagnosed, which means that they're in a more advanced stage of the disease. And the other thing that they found was that even after adjusting for demographic factors like education, Black participants were about twice as likely as whites to experience delusions and hallucinations. They were also more likely to have symptoms like agitation and aggression, irritability, behavioral and appetite changes, and so on. And this is in line with other studies done by the Alzheimer's Foundation and other groups that basically say that there's about a 34 to 35% greater likelihood that Blacks are diagnosed later. This is in spite of the fact that Blacks are about twice as likely than whites to develop Alzheimer's. And just for comparison's sake, Hispanics are about 1.5 times more likely. So Blacks are getting diagnosed at later stages of the disease. The behavioral and cognitive issues are not being picked up on either by the families or by the medical profession. And that is a problem because it continues to add to health disparities in the country.
Certainly does. And we know that there are some interventions, certainly in early on, for brain health that may either support not only the person living with this declining cognitive health, but also the people who live and care for them, to be better informed on what do you do, how do you address certain things that you are noticing about that loved one in your family. So how do we understand this, and how we address this? I know these findings are not the first time that this data, as I mentioned in my opening, is reporting this disparities found in the treatment, in the diagnosis and later stage diagnosis of cognitive decline, Alzheimer's and other dementias. So we find these studies, we have consistent data. I know that you cover this topic and many others on aging, but what are the responses? What do you see in the field that is beginning to change that can help this? And for our listeners, again, those who are in the community or in the Black community, for those who are in the healthcare giving professions, what can they do? What are some of the responses that can be change this direction?
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on here. Part of the issue is that some of the risk factors for Alzheimer's and dementia are more prevalent in Black and Hispanic communities, issues such as obesity, hypertension, diabetes. So certainly, we don't know exactly how Alzheimer's can be prevented or whether it can be prevented, but you can certainly reduce the risk factors for it by maintaining a good weight, eating a healthy diet, controlling diabetes, controlling high blood pressure, and so on. So that's something that both family caregivers and the healthcare community can do more of to educate themselves and their loved ones or patients on these issues. The second is that sometimes there are cultural issues going on, where in certain communities, and this is something the researchers in this study also mentioned, is that often memory loss and those smaller issues of cognitive decline are seen as a quote-unquote normal part of aging. And it's really not. We all slow down slightly as we get older, but Alzheimer's is not inevitable. Dementia is not inevitable. Some of it has to do with the way plaque and protein build up in our brain, but some of it is still unknown, and that's why these, for example, the Alzheimer's Disease Research Centers are so important, because we're still finding out so much. We have a few drugs that can slow down the disease process, but we don't have a cure yet. So being more informed, being better educated, and learning coping techniques to compensate for some of the cognitive decline, such as writing things down, making lists, don't rely on your memory, making sure that if you're a health professional and you're giving instructions to somebody, have them repeat it back to you, give them a printed sheet of paper that they can refer to, making sure that you keep a calendar so you can write all your appointments down. Those are simple tools and techniques that really anybody can use, but it's very important to overcome some of the cultural misconceptions, I guess is a good way to put it, that exist around cognitive health.
And you mentioned that we don't really know the exact reasons for prevention, and then stated some of the factors that are risk factors. And certainly in the study, when we understand that people are being diagnosed later and or are showing up with a more advanced cognitive decline, that there are some pharmaceutical drugs that are being prescribed that still have not shown to be a panacea, and are different people's responses to them have shown that we really are not there yet in terms of treatment. The question of access and people being comfortably or asked about their mental health, if you will, both in terms of anxiety, depression, and even cognitive decline, How frequent do you think that's happening or not happening in these communities where people are being either not talking about their decline or family members not going with them to say, you know, I've noticed there's been a decline in my spouse or in my grandmother, et cetera. So some of the issues might also be that they're not being asked about their mental health or their cognitive health.
That's exactly right, Barbara. And this is one of the things the study found, that Black patients often have to present with more severe clinical symptoms to receive a dementia diagnosis. It's not really clear from this particular study whether it's that the families or the patient is not speaking up or that clinicians are kind of overlooking what might be cognitive signs and symptoms. My suspicion, and this is just an opinion, is that it's a combination of both. There's some reluctance to be forthcoming. Nobody likes to admit that they might be losing their memory. There's often bias in certain communities. As I said, that cognitive decline is a normal part of aging. But I think also that a lot of clinicians are not trained to look for the signs and symptoms, particularly general practitioners who may be seeing dozens and dozens of patients a day. And if the patient doesn't speak up or is hesitant to speak up, then they may just assume that everything's okay. And I think here is something that nurses and nurse practitioners can really play a key role in by talking to the patients, asking them certain key questions, such as what is today's date or who is president of the United States? There are many mental cognitive tests, which is a mouthful to get out, that can help point to potential red flags. And then the clinician could take it from there. If they need a neurologist or they need another type of specialist to do further testing.
We certainly must, I also address that we understand structural racism exists in our healthcare, and they are political structures. They are multifaceted, and slowly, although been reported, and certainly again, this is not the first study that is showing this disparity, that both the education and the delivery of care, and in the structures of our healthcare system, that contributes to this disparity. And our attempts to address them, included in what you've already mentioned, Liz Siegert, is that we must also begin to dismantle some of those structural racisms so that we have more equality and care. What are some of the, one of the other things that I've thought about in my own family was my father, who both my parents are no longer alive, but my father really hid my mother's cognitive decline from the family for quite a while. And it really wasn't until I visited after months, they lived in Florida, where I saw it with my own eyes. And there was a lot of loving intention of not sharing what we saw happening. And then, of course, when we did an evaluation for my mom at a brain center, it really wasn't until my mother was taken by the psychologist to do those mental tests that my father revealed really what was going on. So it was something he had a hard time even sharing with his adult children, including two out of the four of us who are in the healthcare system. So for those who are listening, what would you say to them about protecting, if you will, or an attempt to be protecting their loved ones by not sharing that information or getting care?
Well, I think that we all will kind of make excuses for people. Oh, you know, he's had a stressful day, or she didn't sleep well last night, and that's why mom isn't, you know, remembering what we told her yesterday. It's very easy to make excuses or to cover for the other person and pick up the slack. And I think we've all seen that. I had that same experience with my own dad. And the challenge here is, if you don't flag the problems to the physician or the nurse practitioner or whoever you happen to be seeing for your healthcare, then it's very hard to get help. And there are things that can help. There are tools and techniques, as I mentioned. There is a brand new drug. It's very expensive, but it will be covered by Medicare most likely. And that can help if it's caught early. They found that in early clinical trials, the drug proved very effective in slowing down progression of the disease. Again, we get into those disparity issues because the drug is expensive. It requires going to a clinic to have it infused. And there are not enough people that can afford to take the time off from work, that can afford the copays on these drugs. So that becomes a problem. As far as the caregivers, I think it's important to have a frank discussion with your loved one, and if possible, to speak with the person's healthcare provider and express your concerns that mom's memory or dad's memory or my husband's memory seems to be fading, or that he or she is having certain behavioral issues that I've noticed, particularly around a certain time of day or when certain things tend to trigger it. Again, you can't. There are things that can help, but if you don't first acknowledge the issue, then the help is useless because you won't be receiving it.
Liz Siegert is a reporter who covers issues on aging. She's the Association of Healthcare Journalists topic leader on aging. She's returned to Health Cetera. We always welcome your expertise on reporting on this issue and look forward to having you back in the future. Thank you for joining me.
My pleasure, Barbara.
You've been listening to a podcast of Health Cetera in the Catskills. For more podcasts and discussions of important health issues and policies affecting health, go to Health Cetera's website and blog at www.healthmediapolicy.com. That's www.healthmediapolicy.com. This podcast was produced by Diana Mason, Barbara Glickstein, and production assistant Kai Volsey.